All right, good to see everybody this morning. Glad to have all of you here. Good to see Ralph Tolson, his family over here. Hey, brother, how you doing? That's a good-looking little one you got there. Good to have all of you here. Have any other visitors this morning? Have you introduced the visitors yet? Anyone else visiting? Ralph's not really a visitor, I guess, is he? Okay, who do you have with you today, brother?
I'm from
Dalton. Yeah, get out of here.
This is Jane Donnell. She's soon to be the new bank supervisor.
Great. Okay, Jane, we're glad to have you here with us today. Okay, Tom, who's with you back here? Okay, good. Good to have you here today. Good to see you. All right. All right, who's with you?
This is John Newton. He's visiting from Atlanta.
John Newton. Okay, right. He discovered gravity. Okay. Good to have you here today. Good to see you. Well, you won't have to look too far to see who went fishing yesterday, probably, will you? Well, I'll tell you, we had a great time. Somebody asked me on the way in, well, how'd it go? And I said, well, the record stands. Okay. However, we caught some nice fish yesterday. A bunch of nice fish. Didn't catch any? Oh, man. Well, my boys and I caught, I think it was 44, and we brought home about 40 pounds of fillets. It was tremendous. I'll tell you, great. Tremendous. Red snapper and all that. We're going to have a fish fry. But my face and neck's so red, all I need now is a coon dog cage and a gun rack, and boy, I'll be ready to preach to fellowship. I'll tell you. We're in good shape. But, yes. No, I didn't get the big one, but nobody got one bigger than one I got. Let's put it that way. In fact, in our crowd of Marco and Daniel and John, Daniel caught the largest one. He caught about a 4 or 5 pound snapper. It was just a beautiful fish. And it was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed it. Had a great time together. Looking forward to telling fish stories and had some good fellowship. It was a lot of fun, wasn't it, Al? Just a lot of fun. We had a great time. How many of you went? All the people with red faces, they're the ones that went. Okay, I should have put on some more of that whatever it was stuff. But at any rate, we had a great time. Good time of fellowship. Had a good witness to the people there on the boat, too. And it was a good opportunity for us to talk to them. And was able to give a gospel tract to one of the fellows last night and chat with him for a few minutes while he was cleaning the fish. And it was very worthwhile. And I'm so thankful for Don and the fellows that worked together to set that time up. It's just a lot of fun. We had a good time. And something wrong, though, when I got home. I don't know what it was, but in my bedroom, the floor was going like this. Did you notice that? My whole bed was doing that last night. And I thought it must be because I have a water bed. I don't know. But is that what it was? I don't know. It was something. You heard about the husband and wife. They bought a water bed, and ever since they've been drifting apart. Okay. How far did we get last time? Which one? Oh, no. Well, are we? Which number?
Seven.
The language is called the vehicle of thought. Is that where we are? All right, we're talking about the law of the language. And let me give you some illustrations here, okay? That's number seven and the bottom one. Not, language has been called the vehicle of thought. Not what the speaker expresses from his own mind, but what the hearer understands and reproduces in his mind measures the communicating power of the language used. Okay? Let me give you an illustration. How far is the sun from the earth? 93 million miles, okay? Now, what is that? That's a long way off. 93 million miles. Does anybody have any conception of that? Let me give you some illustrations. If I say to you, the sun is 93 million miles from the sun, Earth and sun, you know, and that the nearest star, Alpha Centauri, is 4 light years away, what does that mean? Does that mean anything to you? Four times? It would take light 4 years to get there at 186,000 miles a second. Now, what does that mean? That doesn't mean anything to me either. But let me give you an illustration to get down to where we live. Let me tell you why you cannot ever build a model of the universe, or even of the solar system, or of our galaxy. You might be able to build a model of our solar system that would be accurate. But if you tried to build a model of our galaxy, and Earth was 1 inch big, 1 inch, the sun would be 75,000 miles away. You can't build a model of it. I mean, if you reduced Earth to smaller than a golf ball, the sun would still be 75,000 miles away. Where would you put it? And see, if you made it small enough to show the relationship, you wouldn't be able to see them. Let me give you another illustration. Take a look at your Bible. One sheet of paper in your Bible. Let's let that represent the distance from the Earth to the sun. Okay? That one sheet of thickness, let's let that represent the distance from the earth to the sun. in order to have enough sheets of paper like that to get to the first star, Alpha Centauri, you'd have to have sheets of paper 75 feet high. Okay? The nearest galaxy, the edge, the far edge of the Milky Way galaxy, measured in increments, if one sheet of paper from your Bible was 93 million miles, from one side of the Milky Way galaxy to the other, would require paper 321 miles deep. That's inconceivable, isn't it? That's the Milky Way galaxy. One of who knows how many? Millions, perhaps. God's made a big universe, hasn't he? Now, in other words, when we make some comparisons like that, that does help us to understand the magnitude of it. Let me give you another one. Now, you know, I've told you before, when you look through a telescope, you see, you know, little things revolve around big things. When you look through an electron microscope, you see the same thing. You can't actually see atoms with anything, though. You can't see it with any, even the most sophisticated microscope. We can see molecules. I read something recently. Let me illustrate to you about the number of molecules that there are and the number of atoms that there are. When we were out on the ocean yesterday, we were talking about this. If you were to take a cup of water, just a normal glass of water that would hold, you know, about a cup, and dip down in there in the ocean and get out a cup of water, and if there was some way that you could take out all the molecules of water and tag them so you would know which ones you had. Now, that's impossible. But if you could take all the molecules out of that water and tag them, and then somehow you were to pour it back in the ocean, and those molecules would be evenly distributed all over the earth, the entire surface of the earth, so that there's some way to mix them with an even distribution through all the oceans, all the land masses, everything on the entire surface of the earth. If you could evenly distribute that cup of water, the molecules that were in there, that's second impossibility. Okay? If you did that, and then you took that same cup and dipped down in the same ocean again and got out another cup of water and identified all the molecules, you would find 100 of your original molecules in that cup. Doesn't that blow your mind? Isn't that amazing? You say, what on earth are you telling us this for? I'm trying to show you how, if we talk about some things of which we have no conception whatsoever, it doesn't mean anything to us. So we use illustrations and language that is somewhat understandable. Now, I can't understand how many millions and billions of molecules there are in a glass of water. But when I hear that illustration, it causes me to realize how vast a number there really are. Or when we talk about those illustrations of the distances within our solar system and the universe, I still don't fully understand it. But it does give me a better understanding, a better appreciation of the magnitude of what we're talking about. You see what I'm saying? When we come to the law of the language, we have to find creative ways to communicate truth to the people that we would influence in order for them to be able to fully understand what we're saying. If we're going to influence people, we've got to be able to communicate in a language that is common both to us and to them. And the two areas in which we're trying to learn how to influence people are what? First one?
Soul winning.
We have to be able to influence people for God. And if we're going to do that, we've got to be able to communicate with them. It's not enough for us just to go and share all of our cliches or to present merely the Romans Road expecting them to understand all the theology that's implied in it. We've got to be able to communicate these ideas to them. And if we don't understand them ourselves, then we can't even get started, because the law of the teacher says the teacher must know that which he would teach. And if we don't find a way to get their attention, we'll never be able to communicate to them anyway, because the law of the learner says that the learner must attend with interest the material to be taught. But then once we've got their attention, once we know what we're talking about, we've got to communicate it in language that both of us understand the same way. Now, there have been times here when you have been communicating something to somebody about spiritual things. Maybe you've been telling your children. That's the other area of influence, child rearing. Maybe you've been talking and you thought you were being understood and you weren't. Okay? Anybody have an illustration of that? An illustration where you were talking to somebody or to a child and they understood it differently than you did. Yes? Mm-hmm. She didn't know what the curbing was. Yeah, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, there's a good illustration. Yesterday we caught a lot of amberjack fish. And Marco kept thinking we were saying lumberjacks. Okay? And so he said, can you eat those lumberjacks? And I thought, what is he talking about? And he was trying to say amberjacks. He understood the word differently or didn't realize what we were saying. So you've got to use language that's common to both. Anybody else have an illustration? Maybe on soul winning. Let's hear. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Everything's very absolute. When Becky was just a little tyke, she, in Sunday school one morning, they studied Daniel and the Lion's Den. And boy, whoever described it really made it graphic. And then that week, a friend of ours was going to take her out to eat to the Dragon Den. Okay? And she didn't want to go. Okay? And she was scared. Okay? Well, sure she would be. I don't want to go to the den of dragons, she said, like that, you know. And poor little tyke, you know. We sometimes fail to understand how it's impressing them. Yes. Yeah, okay, when we use different languages, where she's from, they call a drinking fountain a bubbler, is what she said, and there was a confusion about that. So we've got to use language that's common to both. Frank? A lot of interesting in the picture writing. What do they call it? The picture writing, what's the name of the word? Huh? Pictographs, which is what the Japanese and many of the Oriental languages are in. And in Chinese, for example, the word for atonement is the word sheep over the word me. A sheep over me. That's the way they translate atonement in the Chinese language. Beautiful illustrations there. And the way that you can communicate it. And years ago, of course, when the missionaries were translating the Bible, they had to find ways of communicating the ideas. And so a sheep over me, and as they drew the picture and explained it. I remember one time I was preaching in a Spanish church several years ago, and I was using illustrations. Somewhere the word wheelbarrow came up. And the fellow that was translating for me, he just kept going on and on and on. And I thought, what are you talking about here? And he was trying to describe, he couldn't remember the word for wheelbarrow, so he's trying to describe what you do with a wheelbarrow. And it was like 20 questions. Finally, the people in the congregation guessed it, you know. But he was trying to think of bucket, you know, and all these different things. But it was hard to get the word across because sometimes, even when you do, the illustration doesn't come through. Okay, that's got us on track. We're talking about things related to language. Language, then, has been called the vehicle of thought. Not what the speaker expresses from his own mind, but what the hearer understands and reproduces in his mind measures the communicating power of the language used. Therefore, it is incumbent upon the speaker to ensure that the law of the language is used properly. Is that fair? What now, the listener has to make it clear that he's not understanding. I don't understand you. I'm sorry, but say that again. What do you mean by that? In other words, the listener has to be able to let the speaker know that he's not understanding. But it is the listener's responsibility to find the language that he's using with his children or with those he would win to Christ in order to help them get the idea. Okay? All right, let's look at the next number now. Men's words are like ships laden with the riches of every shore of knowledge which their own has visited, while the words of the child are but toy boats on which are loaded the simple notions he has picked up in his brief experience. I thought that was such a tremendous sentence, I'd just go ahead and copy it entirely. In other words, when a man, a grown man who's had many, many experiences, and those experiences are very rich, when he thinks from that richer experience. Whereas a little child that we're trying to influence, he's just got a little toy boat. He doesn't have very much yet to think with. He doesn't have a lot of experiences. He doesn't have a lot of illustrations. I think the older you get, the more you learn, the more easily you ought to be able to learn. Understand what I mean by that? Because the more you know, the more you can relate new things to and learn them much more quickly. You can categorize the things in your mind and you can illustrate from within your own thinking. That's why it's easier sometimes for a person who has a good education and is well-read and has a lot of broad experiences in life, it's easier for a person like that to understand somebody than it is for a person who's extremely technical in one particular field. A broader range of information or knowledge, it's easier to talk to a person like that than somebody who's really technical. And, you know, every now and then I'll meet somebody who's technical who will use his technical language in his normal conversation. He gets a little egg-headed, you know, and he only talks with his colleagues from time to time. Have you ever met anybody like that? You know, no offense to the medical profession, but doctors do that. Doctors use official medical language sometimes when they're talking even to their patients. And you have to kind of think, now, I wonder what that is. I wonder what that means. You know, and sometimes they're explaining things very technically instead of simply, because they want to be accurate or they don't want to mislead somebody. But this is a good illustration of it. And I think that we do the same thing. Probably the group that does this more than anybody else would be Christian people who are using the language of the Bible or the language of theology to communicate truth to the man on the street. You go up to the average person today and try to tell him that Christ is the propitiation for his sins, you think he's going to understand you? How many times do you use propitiation in your normal language, normal conversation? Have you ever used it? What does the word atonement mean? Justification, regeneration, redemption. We don't use those words very much. All of the words that we use to describe the theology of a thing don't carry the same meaning to others. I saw a fellow the other day who was reading a book by a philosopher, and the title is, What is Life? You go up to the average person asking that question, he would think that's a ridiculous question. What do you mean, what is life? It's, you know, it's life. Yeah. And this guy had written a whole book about it. How do you write a book on a question like that? Well, obviously, you've got to get into some different levels of understanding than those words would normally imply to us, right? How about the word saved? Born again. What do those words mean to the man on the street? Salvation, sure. What a salvation. Hey, what does the word born again mean in our society today? Say it again. Okay. Yeah, but those are some illustrations of it. What does the word born again mean in American culture today? Yes. No, I don't agree. What does it mean, Tom? It means a new start. Turn over a new leaf. That's what it means in our society today. To be born again in American society today means to start over. It's become a cliche in our American society. Oh, I was reborn. Boy, I had a good night's sleep, you know. And man, I got up this morning, man. I was reborn. I was born again. I hear that all the time. You hear it in the media. You hear the news people using it. Now, it has evolved from these different things that we're talking about. From a religious experience to where now it refers to sort of just a rebirth, just a new start, turn over a new leaf, and that's what they mean by it, and they think that's legitimate. But when they hear us use it, they think these other things. They think fanatical. Fundamentalist. What does the word fundamentalist mean in American culture today? Yeah, fanatical extremist. That's what fundamentalist means in American society. It means fanatical extremist of any type. That isn't what the word means. What does the word fundamental mean, by the way? Basic. That's right. Foundational. Rudimentary. A fundamental is a root, foundational principle. That's a good word. Fundamental law or a fundamental truth or a fundamental lesson. It means it's where you start. It's the basic foundation. We are fundamentalists. What is the foundation? What is the basis? What is the final word? Just gave you a clue. It's the Bible. The Bible. The fundamental thing in our religion is the Word of God. All right? But that's not what the average person means today when they use the word fundamental or fundamentalist. Joan? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You run into that a lot. And a lot of times a lot of people don't even know what the Bible is. What does the word Bible mean? It means book. Okay? This is the Bible. This is the book. It's a God-written book. And sometimes it's necessary for us to explain that to people and to show them. And, of course, a lot of people have heard things. Nobody has ever found a contradiction in the Bible. So if anybody tells you that no, I've read it for myself, and I've searched it out, and I know it's full of contradictions. No, he heard somebody say that. He thinks it's true, and he's using it for an excuse. He hasn't done it. Why? Because it isn't possible. Okay? But you will hear people say to you, well, I've found contradictions. So what is the obvious refutation of that, if you can do it politely enough without starting a fight? Let's take a look at it. You know, I always tell people, look, I want to do what's right. I want to know the truth. And if I'm wrong, then I need to know the truth. I believe this is right. If you know something better or something different, I wish you'd show it to me. If there is a contradiction in the Bible, I'd like to see it, because I've studied it and I've never found one. And my whole faith is based on, among other things, the fact that there aren't any in there. So if you can show me one, I'd really be interested in seeing it. And I mean that with all my heart. On the other hand, don't you want to know the truth? And if I can show you the truth, wouldn't you like to see it? You see, that's fair. Okay, so when we're talking to some people, they don't really have enough experiences to even use to be able to communicate abstractions. So we have to understand that. Words often come to be liked or disliked for the ideas that they suggest. That teacher will do best work who chooses his words wisely, raising the most and the clearest images in the minds of his pupils. Boy, that's interesting right there. Words often come to be liked or disliked for the ideas that they suggest. The word fundamentalist is not a popular word today. We don't mind calling ourselves fundamentalists because we know what that means. But if you call yourself a fundamentalist to the average person in society today, you are saying something about yourself that you don't necessarily want to say. You see? I'm a little bit careful about how I use the word fundamentalist. I have absolutely no hesitation to use the word fundamentalist when I'm talking to a Christian. When I'm talking to a lost person, I don't use that word very much, unless I know I'm going to have an opportunity to explain it. Yes, sir? You're going to have to speak up. I don't know whether I'm just not able to hear you or what, but go ahead. Mm-hmm. That's good. Good answer. Good answer. I'm a Bible believer. I put my faith. Say again.
Which Bible?
Yeah, which Bible? Okay, this one right here. Okay. King James. All right, that's good. All right. The teacher will do the best work who chooses his words wisely, raising the most and the clearest images in the minds of his pupils. In other words, if you can pick words out that have positive, encouraging, motivating influence rather than negative influence, if you're trying to help a child, try not to discourage the child. Listen, watch the effect that your words are having on the young person. I mean, you know that anybody who's learned this, there's one way you can tell your kids to go to bed that'll make them not want to. There's another way you can tell them to go to bed that'll make them want to. And you have to be careful about it. I don't think that's compromising. I don't think that's bribing. I mean, I hear some people say, well, I don't think you ought to. I just think you ought to just be clear and plain and honest and all that kind of stuff. No, I think that's stupidity. Listen to me. If you say to a child, now look, it's time to go to bed. I don't want any foolishness from you. You get in that bed. You stay in that bed. You be quiet. You know. Now, it sounds like punishment. But you go to the child and you say, now look, well, we have big plans tomorrow. Go on a fishing trip tomorrow. I know it's going to be hard to get to sleep because you're excited about it, but you just lay real still. Let's get some rest so we'll all feel good tomorrow. Because, boy, tomorrow's going to be a great day. Is that different? Doesn't sound like punishment now. Sounds like part of a blessing, doesn't it? Now, a wise mama or daddy will learn how to do that. And a wise soul winner will learn how to do that too. And you have to be willing to pay the price to learn how to communicate to people in that way. Most people put the burden of communication on the one that they're talking to instead of on themselves. And that's why an awful lot of people in life don't have very many effective opportunities to talk to others. Have you ever sat under a teacher that made you do all the work? You not only had to get it for yourself, but you had to compensate for the incompetence of the person who was teaching you. You ever had to do that? I have. That's frustrating. That's what makes kids hate school. Hate the lesson or hate the subject. The subject that I dislike the most in my life were not really subjects I disliked. They were taught by teachers I disliked. You know that's true? You think back in your own experience and see if that isn't true. Why did I dislike those teachers? Not because they were bad people, because they were incompetent. They couldn't teach the subject. I don't know whether it was they didn't know it themselves very well, or they didn't know how to get attention, or they didn't know how to communicate it. You know, have you ever been taught by somebody who uses the word they're trying to define in the definition? You know? What does it mean? What is driving? Oh, well, that's when you drive. You know, I mean, that's the way little children define things. You know, they understand it, but they don't know how to make you understand it. And some teachers are that way. What does it mean to get saved? Well, you know, it means that's when you get saved. That's the way some Christian people are. What does it mean to trust the Lord? Well, you know, it means to trust the Lord. That's the way some people define things. They don't understand it any better than that. Yes, sir. Because, yeah, because why? Well, just because. He knows, he just doesn't understand that you don't understand. And any simple word that he uses will stir up that understanding in his mind. He doesn't know how to get it to you. Yes? Yeah. Now, what's an exterior? Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, but you know, the word surface sounds just like the word service. Now, what's a service? Well, that's something we have at church. No, service is what you get when you go to the restaurant. You see? I mean, you can, there are a service. Oh, that's what you, that's in tennis. You know? What is military. A service? Huh? Military. Oh, it's the military. When I was in the service. I mean, I'm saying, yeah, well, you know, when I was in the service, yeah. Which service? Okay? Heard a story about the little boy, I've told you that one, on Memorial Day. He asked the lady, what are the flags for? And she said, well, that one's the American flag. That was the Christian flag, and the other flag is for all the men that died in the service. And the little boy says, was it the morning service or the evening service? Sometimes our services feel that way. But isn't that something? No, it's surface. Surface. Oh, surface. Yeah. Confusing to a little mind. Isn't that right? Very confusing. And we have to be able to demonstrate these things much more clearly, draw pictures and illustrations and all that kind of thing. Listen, we need to understand that this is a real barrier. I'm convinced that this right here, this is where most soul winners get discouraged. Even if we teach them about the gospel, and even if we teach them how to get interest, a lot of people are not willing to pay the price to become proficient at communicating these truths. It takes a lifetime to learn how to do this well. Yes, sir. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, advertising is a big lie today for the most part. I mean, no offense to anybody that's in advertising, but I've been thinking about that a lot lately, how in the early days of television, the commercials tried to reason with the listener. They would try to give you some logical reason why you should choose one product over another because of its merits. You never, ever see that in advertising anymore. They present it as though it were, but the reasons are not really logical reasons. It's all emotional hype to try to get you... Huh?
Pride.
Yeah, appeal to your pride or something like that. It really is. And that is so unfortunate. We're going to have to move on. One more comment. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Okay. So we've got to use images that are clear. It is as necessary for the teacher fully to understand the child as for the child to understand the teacher. The teacher must learn the needs of the pupil from his words. From his words. When we're teaching children, we've got to listen to those children. When Daniel took the dog to dog obedience school, the first thing that they teach you, the very first lesson, if you don't get this first lesson down, you'll never get any further, is they teach the dog to look at the one who's going to give the commands. Teach your dog to look at you. And a well-trained dog, it's funny, you'll see them. They'll come around, they'll just be wiggling and everything, but they'll try to sit still, and they'll just sit right in front of their master and look up. Look at them. You'll never train a dog that doesn't learn that lesson right there. Will come when you call him. You see? Why? Because that's where it has to start. You've got to be able to recognize what they're looking for. You see? It's necessary for the teacher to understand the child as it is for the child to understand the teacher. Probably even more so at first. Now let's apply this to soul winning. I am convinced that the biggest problem in soul winning in this matter of language is that most soul winners do not understand the person they would win. They don't understand where they're coming from. And because they don't understand where they're coming from, they don't know how to reach them. You see? Most Christian people who've been saved for a few years that are not aggressive soul winners to get out into the world and reach people for Christ have lost touch with the world. They've lost touch with lost people. They don't know how to communicate to them anymore. We have got to be able to understand them in order to get them to understand us. You see what I'm saying? And sometimes they're going to communicate in ways that are just naturally offensive to us. But we've got to be able to cope with that and to deal with that. Okay? Language is the instrument as well as the vehicle of thought. No teaching is complete that does not issue in plain and intelligent expression of the lesson. This means that the expression should be in the language of the child and not mere repetition of ready-made definitions of someone else in words very likely in many cases to be totally unfamiliar. While you're copying down those answers, by the way, does anybody else need a handout this morning? Boy, I should have asked. All right, if you don't have the lesson number 3, raise your hand. Always do that now. See, let me know what your needs are, okay? Okay, all right. We've got the first two filled out, and we've got number 3 here. Yeah, and if you have one, bring it back to you next week, okay? All right, he'll get you one so you can be filling these out. Have you ever noticed how we deem those people highly intelligent who are able to articulate the things that we believe? Let me say that again. Have you ever noticed that we deem those highly intelligent who are able to articulate the things that we believe? In other words, the greatest excitement in a lesson or a sermon or a conversation comes not really from learning something from the person, but from hearing the other person or yourself in conversation state so clearly and concisely the things you really hold in your heart. In other words, it's amazing how smart we think people are who agree with us. Isn't that right? What is the excitement that comes from hearing someone say something that we ourselves believe? Because when they articulate it well, we think, oh, yes, that is so brilliant. Yes, that's true. It's not really that we've learned some new truth necessarily, although I think we do. It's just that that person made it sound so right, so good, so true. Oh, I wish I had said it like that. You ever had that feeling? I'm not really that sure, apart from the Bible, which is not like any other book in the world, but I'm not really sure that we really learn anything from books either. I love to read books, but you know, one of the things that helped me in books, I learn new facts and I learn new information, but I'm not real sure I learn any new philosophies or ideas. I might. I'm not sure. But I think what's really happening is when I read books, they're helping me to clarify ideas that I'm already having. Or they're helping me to combine ideas that I've already had in a new way. And when I have finished a book that is really a good book, it's not because it has really enlightened me in something in which I was ignorant, but because it has stated so well something that I already hold to. It's kind of like being in a ball game and seeing a guy slam dunk the ball, you know, 2 points, and yeah, wow, boy, I wish I'd done that. That's what I mean. You know, I wish I was out there. You like to see it done well. I mean, now, you know, after you've seen somebody slam dunk a ball, you don't sit back and say, isn't that amazing? He took that ball. He put it in that little ring. I've never seen anything like that. You know, that's not the experience that you're having. It's not some new realization. It's a thrill of seeing it done well. Isn't that right? And that's what comes from language, too. The thing that really gets people excited about language is when somebody takes something that you already know a little bit yourself and says it perfectly. Right? Now, I know you learn things, and I know you pick up new ideas, but that truth is nevertheless there. And that is that we get excited about people who say things in words that are very familiar to us. Now, not mere repetition of ready-made definitions of somebody else, but words and very likely in many cases to be totally unfamiliar. Okay? We're going to have to speak in the language of the child, not in these unfamiliar terms that we have heard ourselves over and over and over again. We've got to communicate with the child, understand what the child is saying. Read in a psychology book one time about a mother who took her little child into the kindergarten class. And the little kid looked up, and they had all the finger painting pictures around the top of the blackboards. And the mother was trying to meet the teacher and wanted the little child to make a good impression so that she would be thought of as a successful mother and all the other motivations that we do in situations like that. And the little kid looked at the teacher and said, "Who painted these ugly pictures?" And you know what the mother, "Oh, no, 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 no. No, don't act like that. No, those aren't ugly pictures. Those are nice pictures." The teacher was very wise. She knew that the kid really didn't want to know who painted the ugly pictures. This little kid has just come into this classroom. He's got one thing on his mind. My mother's going to leave me here with all these other people. And I'd like to find out if it's going to be safe to be here. Wonder what happens to people who paint like that. Because I paint like that. And so the teacher very wisely said, "You don't have to paint pretty pictures here. You can paint however you want to." The little kid smiled. Why? Because he knew that she knew and understood. What he really wanted to know is it safe to be here or not? Now, we come home at night. We walk through the front door. Husbands, the wife is in there getting supper ready. Everything's in good shape. What do you want to know? Hey, how'd it go today? You don't want to know how it went today. You want to know if it's safe to come home. Huh? Isn't that right? And it doesn't really matter what her answer is. One way or the other, she's going to let you know. Oh, great. Great. How'd your day go? Oh, all right. Fine or bad or whatever. You know you're safe. It's all right to be home. You wouldn't believe the day I had. Boy, I'm telling you, the sink backed up, and this got broken. He hit her, and all blah, 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 blah. And the fellow says, I think I'm going to, I left something in the car. I'll be up. I'm going to go check my tools in the attic. I'll be right back. I got something I got to do in the garage. Call me when supper's ready. I got to get out of here. I mean, you know, man, I put up with this all day, and I don't need any more of it. Isn't that the way it works?
I think the wife is trying to find out if she can lay her load on you.
Sure. Yeah, she wants to know, hey, did you come home to rescue me, or are you going to need help like they have all day, because I'm tired of this. Okay. See, that's the conversation that's really taking place. So, you know, there'd be a nice way if we could get around that. If the husband would just come home and knock on the door and say, safe to come in? Everybody acting right today? You know, I'm home. I'd like to come in. You know, yeah, isn't that right? Hey, isn't that what a handshake is? Watch this. Stand up here, Dave. You know what a handshake, you know where this got started? This got started in the Middle Ages, late Middle Ages, early part of the Renaissance, shaking hand. Hey, no knife. Here it is. Okay? I'm not going to hurt you. Take my hand. That's what that means. No weapon. It's right here. Say, it's language. Yes, sir.
We must have lost something along the way. We used to just say, we'll throw our shoe in and see if it comes back.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good idea, man. I'll try that. Throw your shoe in. If it doesn't come back out, go on in. Okay. All right, yes.
Usually a woman feeds her man first.
Yeah. Yeah, while he's sitting there trying to enjoy his meal. And she, yeah. Come here, I got some monkeys for you. Okay, take these. Okay, isn't that right? Now, we've got to learn to communicate. And the same thing's true. I mean, you sit down next to some person on the airplane. What does he want to know? Is this guy going to let me get on with my life, or is he going to interfere with my life? And we start to interfere with his life. Hey, you want to talk religion? I mean, that's what we say in essence, isn't it? And he looks and says, no, I do not. I'm only going to be on here for an hour, and I don't like flying anyway, and I certainly don't like to fly with some nut. So I wish you'd just mind your own business. I mean, that's the subliminal conversation. Now, we've got to get beyond all of that if we're ever going to talk to this guy and start showing some genuine concern. What kind of work do you do? Where are you from? And I'm not talking about, you know, asking all of these questions so that we can get the right to interfere and hinder or be offensive. I'm talking about showing some genuine concern until you meet a point of common interest. Okay? That's what it takes. And that's what we have to do, to be able to communicate with people in a way that they can understand us. Okay? Let's move on. We got to get something. We're never going to get done if we don't move on. Talking is thinking. For ideas must precede words. The full and clear statement of a problem is often the best part of solving it. Debaters, what's the first thing you do? Very first thing you do when you get up to the debate? Define your terms. Define your terms. Preachers, what do you do when you're studying a text? Anybody here know? Okay. Study the words. Know what the words mean. You'll never know what the verse means until you know what the words mean. You never know what the words mean until you know the origin of the words. You won't know the origin of the words until you look them up. Look them up. Exterior. The word was used a minute ago. Ek, Greek, out. Okay? Check out those terms. Find out what they mean. Outside.
Just
yes?
I mean that in the Reader's Digest,
mm-hmm.
The comment about only in America with the department of the government that has everything to do with everything outside.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything has to do with the outside is called the Department of the Interior in America. That's right. But it's the interior of the country. Okay? Yes. Yeah.
The preacher is that every time you think about him, you're talking to yourself.
That's right.
And reinforcing the idea.
That's right. That's right. If you don't think in words, what do you think in? Feelings. Feelings. And people who aren't able to take their concepts and ideas and thoughts and feelings and put them into words are only going to be communicating emotion. Okay? We've got to be able to couch our thoughts in language that means what we think before we can ever hope for someone else to hear what we're really saying. That's why you've heard me say, you will never, ever be able to mean what you say unless you're able to say what you mean. Did you hear that? You will never be able to mean what you say until you're able to say what you mean. That's clear. I know it, but I just can't put it into words. What's the next word? What's the next sentence? Then you might as well not know it. That's right. It's doing you and nobody else any good at all if you can't put it into words. Not even helping you. What is meditation then? What is meditation?
Thinking it over in your mind.
It's putting into words within your own mind those things which you know. That's what meditation is. Phrasing, rephrasing, thinking it through, examining, considering, measuring, phrasing, and all this kind of thing until you've got a good, succinct statement. I've been working on a way to try to phrase this. This is the kind of stuff I think about when I drive down the road. I'm sure you do this too. That statement I made a minute ago about it, it is interesting how we deem those people intelligent who are able to accurately or who are able to, what did I say? Who are able to articulate the things which we believe. Yeah, I got to find a way to say that simply in one little sentence. That's a truth right there. That's a true principle. But if we keep working on it and get it down to where it's an epigram almost. You know what an epigram is? Epigram is just a little sentence. It's like Ben Franklin's little statements. You know, stitch in time saves nine. That's an epigram. Things like that. Just one little sentence that's just so true that it's just, yeah, boy, that guy, he's captured the essence of it. And that kind of thing really builds rapport with people. Why do people laugh at a joke? Have you ever thought about that? What is funny about a joke? Yeah, the way it's worded. The little phrase. The catch at the end. Somebody sets you up, and then they just one little sentence, and if the sentence is clever, it immediately brings in a flood of realization, and there's a point of contact between the joke teller and the jokey, okay? The joker and the jokey. There's a point right there where there's immediate identification and immediate understanding. And the thing that you're really enjoying together is not the story that's being told, but the depth of communication that you're having. Yeah, jokey. Yeah, that's not... What's funny about that? Well, you know what I was trying to say, and I thought of a silly little word, and you got it. And we laughed. Isn't that right? The reason we laugh at a joke is because we're able to understand a whole lot of stuff with just a little bit of words. Isn't that right? I got a can of stuff the other day. And I've been going around showing it to people. It's so funny. It's called Road Weary Potted Possum. Okay? It's just potted meat's all it is. But on the back it tells all about how they process this. How their processors... I mean, it's a legitimate can of food is what it is. It's nothing but beans and beef and chicken stuff, but it's got a little picture of a dead possum on the front. You know, talks about how this company, they go out and fresh every morning, collect the possums off the I-26 and bring them back in, you know, and then process them, you know. And it's hilarious. I saw it in the store. I got to get a can of that, so I put it on my shelf there. Potted possum. So we got to tell them possum jokes the other day. You know, why did chicken cross the road? Show the possum it was possible, okay? That's right. I don't want to hear that one about how many guys it takes. I don't want to hear that one. You know what an armadillo is? That's possum on the half shell, okay? And, you know, and we laugh about that kind of stuff. Now, why do we do that? The reason I'm telling you these stories is to show you what I'm talking about. It evokes a picture. We're able to communicate an idea in just a few simple little words or in an unusual and new way. And it really causes us to want to continue that conversation, continue that communication, right? Now, folks, why can't we learn to do those same things when we're trying to influence our children or when we're trying to influence people for the Lord? Somehow we got this idea that we have to be somber and serious because it's spiritual, you know, this kind of thing. That's so absurd. It is serious. But it's serious enough to learn to do well. If you're really serious about it, then get good at it. Don't just be somber about it. That's not serious. You see? If it's really serious, then it's important. And if it's important, we ought to learn how to do it well. And part of doing it well is doing it in such a way that the other person wants to be involved. You see? You heard the story about the guy that went to prison? And there was only one joke book in the prison library. And so after a while, they all were telling the same joke. They just numbered them, you know. And the guy, he said, well, that'll help me. I'll develop some rapport with these guys. And so he went back, and they were sitting at the chow line that evening, and everybody was eating. And he says, hey, guys, 43. And nobody laughed. And another guy says, yeah, hey, 17. Everybody laughed. And so he says, okay, 21. Nobody laughed again. And so he looked at his buddy. And he says, don't they like the jokes I'm telling? He says, no. He says, not that. It's just some guys just can't tell a joke. You know? Okay. The point is, we've got to be able to communicate an idea in a way that will really make people interested in what we're saying. That's the law of the language. Yes. That's right. That's right. You're absolutely right. People can speak English and still not be able to communicate. That's exactly right. We master truth by expressing it and are glad when we have clearly expressed our thought. Isn't that right? When you're able to clearly state your case, you've said it the way it ought to be said. That's a satisfying experience, isn't it? Okay? The choir is leaving. They're actually getting ready. Language has still another use. It is the storehouse of our knowledge. The storehouse of our knowledge. Listen, you know why a lot of people can't remember things? Because they never clearly state them. You think about that for a few minutes. I'm not trying to brag on this, but a lot of people have told me that I have an excellent memory. I think I do have an excellent memory. You know why I have an excellent memory? Because I file things in my mind properly. If I learn something, I want to state it and phrase it and rephrase it and share it and tell it and say it and get it to the place where I really understand it. And once you get to the place where you really understand something, you can forget about remembering it. Because, now that's a little play on words. Because you're going to remember it whether you want to or not. Once you have clearly stated it. Remember what I said about George Patton? George Patton said there's no education in a second kick of a mule. Now what does that mean? That means you should not to have to learn a hard lesson again. But the reason some people do is because they never learned it the first time. A person who learns something, who will sit down and articulate to himself what it is he's learning, that person will really be able to understand the lesson and the truth, okay? So, language has still another use. It's the storehouse of our knowledge. What you put, or how you put something into your mind is going to determine whether or not you're going to be able to get it out. Okay? That's why people ought to take notes when they're listening to a preacher. I never listen to preaching without taking notes. Maybe that's not true. Every now and then, but very rarely. Very rarely. I always have my notebook with me, and I as a general rule, the great majority of the time, I take notes on the preacher. Why? Because I'm trying to write down what he says? No. Because I'm trying to rephrase and write down what I'm thinking about while he's talking. Because that's what I'm really learning. What are the ideas and the truths that I've gotten out of that? You're only going to remember probably 5 to 10% of the things that I say when I preach. What did I preach on last Sunday morning? Yeah, see, you have to think for a few minutes, don't you? And some of you could think all day and never remember it. Okay? But those of you that took notes would know immediately. Yeah. Boy, you interrupted my thoughts a half a dozen times. That's good. It's tremendous. That's right. In other words, you really got my attention today. And he says, he sits back there and writes down things, and the preacher gets all motivated. Boy, he thinks he's writing down his sermons. He said, boy, he's writing down all these ideas he's getting while the preacher's preaching, which is exactly what ought to be being done. You see? Because that's what you're really learning and realizing. But if people will learn to write things down, you can't talk, but you're having a conversation with a preacher when you're taking notes. You're really learning and you're rephrasing and you're putting things down and asking questions. I write questions to myself. And then later on, sometimes the preacher will answer it. And if he doesn't, well, then I go look up the answer myself. Getting your language involved in your memory. That's the point we're making. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. When we introduced this series right here, now we were talking about that very thing. When we started out on this business of learning how to influence people, we pointed out the fact that most people want to get through life with whatever skills just naturally come to them. But you'd never be able to make a living if you did that. You'd never be able to accomplish anything in life. You certainly can't raise your children if you just wanting to teach them whatever occurs to you at the moment. It takes thought and consideration. And the same thing's true of soul winning. Soul winning is the greatest blessing in a Christian life in this earth. And when a person leads somebody to the Lord, they understand then their whole purpose for being here. But most people go soul winning for a while with whatever innate ability they have. If they have a lot of innate ability, a lot of talent, they'll win a lot of people. But if they don't have very much ability or talent, or ability to communicate or understand, or really understand how to use the scriptures wisely, they're not going to be very effective. And they're going to drop out and let that fear overcome them. Fear is what keeps us from learning what we ought to do. But when we really develop those abilities that God has given us and learn how to communicate well, that's when we're going to be able to know that joy on a more frequent basis. And again, I reject the idea that every Christian has the innate ability to be a soul winner. I think every Christian has the obligation to become a soul winner, but not every Christian has the innate talent or ability to be a soul winner at first. Now, he can proclaim the gospel, but he cannot proclaim what he does not understand. He cannot use words that other people understand unless he learns how to do that. God does not give us, at the moment of salvation, the ability to communicate. He does give us the Holy Spirit. Therefore, we have the potential. We have to work at it. We have to be good at it. When the Lord gave us the Bible, he also expects us to read it. Fair? Okay. You can't just take a Bible in a package and hand it to somebody and say, if you want to go to heaven, here it is. This is the how-to book right here. How shall they hear without a preacher? A preacher has got to be trained. He's got to be prepared. He's got to learn these things. So this is what we're talking about, if you want to know that joy. Real quickly, let's get a few more. The language of the child then may be considered not only the measure of his attainments, but the embodiments of the elements of his knowledge. In other words, whatever that kid knows, he knows in what he can say in his language. Whatever language he has stored up in his mind, that's where his knowledge is. It's in words. Yes, sir? I'm not opposed to multiple choice questions, necessarily. We're discouraging from that? Discouraging him from phrasing his speech, or his ideas? Yeah, I think that's probably true. If you have all multiple guess and true, false, and stuff like that, and you don't teach the child how to express himself, I think that's a valid point. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. How come most children today don't write their grandparents or their aunts and their uncles? Is it that they don't care about them? Probably not. They probably do care about them. It's laziness in language is what it is. You take the average young person, sit him down to write a letter, and he'll start out, "How are you?" "I'm fine." And then mom or dad will make him write three or four more other sentences, and then that's all he'll be able to say, and then he'll sign off. If he were to get together with them in person, after a while he might be able to have a conversation. But it's extremely difficult for the average young person to sit down and write a letter to grandma or grandpa. Why? Because it's extremely difficult for him to express himself in print ever. This is a real problem in our society today. It really is. I've spurred some thoughts, I see. Okay, let's start back here. That's right. That's exactly right. Now, why would we rather make a phone call than write a letter? It's easier. It's quicker. We don't have to be as clear. I mean, we could just say what we think and we'll hear their immediate response. If they don't understand us, we can change it back and forth. It's easier. Because we're lazy. Right? We got to quit. We had two or three more hands. Say it while I'm wrapping up. Yes. That's possibly true. Yeah, it's hard for them to communicate at all. That's exactly right. Well, what we're talking about here is a big problem. Now, how does it relate to us? Why are we spending all this time here in Sunday school? Somebody said, "Well, let's just preach the Bible." We've been doing that for years. I'm trying to help you find out how to preach it to others. Okay? We got to find a way to get it out to the world. And it's basic. Look, it's just like language school. Like Brother Roger was saying a while ago, how can a missionary go to the mission field and hope to communicate the gospel to the lost on the mission field unless he learns Spanish or learns French or whatever the language of the country is? You know why English-speaking people, Americans, don't win other Americans? They don't know how to communicate. Isn't that right? I believe that with all my heart. Now, you can talk all for the rest of your life, but if you're going to try to communicate some ideas that are required for a person to understand and believe in order to be saved, you're going to have to be a communicator. You're going to have to learn how to be a communicator. And those of you that want to learn to do that, it is possible. And others that sit back and try to spiritualize it and say, "Well, I just preach the Bible, brother. Just trust the Lord." That's a stupid, lazy excuse. Okay? I saw a hand over here. Yes. Yeah. Cultural differences. The whole thing. That's right. Different cultures, even in America. Anybody used to live up north, now lives down here? You know what I'm talking about. Okay? Different cultures. Isn't that right? People look at things differently. Folks, we got to quit. They're back there forcing the doors here. Okay? All right. Let's stand and be dismissed in prayer. Father, thank you now for your word. Thank you, Lord, that you have communicated what you want us to know in words. You've written it down. And Lord, I pray that we would be willing to think, write down, learn to communicate those ideas that we need to take from you to a world that needs Christ. Lord, help us to be willing to pay that price. Help us to do the work that's necessary to communicate clearly. And Lord, we know that'll be a blessing not only to us, but to those whom we reach for Christ as well. In Jesus' name, amen.